This is Colourful.
What about the aftermath of the Dr. David Starkey comments? He was on Newsnight a few nights ago last Friday evening, and people have been complaining about 700 or so because he said black culture, nihilistic black culture, was essentially turning white chavs black and was destroying the fabric, the moral fabric, essentially, of this nation. Let's talk to Dr. Les Henry, who's a sociologist working in South London, but actually across the capital. He runs a consultancy called New Beyond. He's on the line. Dr. Les, good morning to you.
Greetings and good morning to you.
Greetings.
Morning.
Before we go any further, I mean, on black culture, because people have been attacking what Dr. Starkey said and some defending it from various different standpoints. Some people saying, well, actually, there is something about black culture, certain kind of culture, youth culture, that makes it cool and makes young white kids want to rebel, be anti-authority, the Ali G phenomenon. And others say it's nonsense to talk of black culture because you get people from Africa and the Caribbean who haven't grown up in this country. They come here, they can't recognize what we call black culture. Where do you come at this from?
Well, to me, exactly. Culture, you see, to me, I would more go with the last point, because culture is always fluid. You know, it's morphous, amorphous, any kind of morphous you want to put on it. It just borrows and takes influences. In fact, I find it kind of interesting that the tune you're playing in the background there is Chiang Kai-shek, which the Jamaicans named after that Chinese revolutionary general.
Yes.
So, you know, what kind of influences are we talking about on black culture?
Mm-hmm.
Because One of the ways how these kind of arguments are always pushed out in so-called times like this is, you know, it's easy to blame what people see as the most apprehendable or the most apparent. So you mentioned Ali G, to me, I have my own views on him anyway, but you mentioned him, and he, because of his background and the influence that he could have, he portrayed a particular type of what it was to be black.
Yeah.
And therefore, a lot of people bought into that and actually thought that was black culture. That was a caricature of what he thought black culture was.
Mm-hmm.
But then before you knew it, a lot of the young people were actually speaking like that, and they became a caricature of a caricature. So when people are talking about this kind of influence of black culture on white youth, it's a very complex argument. And what David Starkey did the other day was he simplified it. For me, just to make a point, maybe he wants to sell some books or I don't know, I have no idea. But if you think about it, if we want to look at the so-called influence of black culture on white societies, well, let's be realistic then and look at how the ancient Africans educated the ancient Greeks and the ancient Romans.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't want to talk about that. So was that a bad influence? Was it a detrimental influence? What exactly are they talking about? If you ask them to qualify and explain what black culture is, they can't do it. Because if you think about it, if you listen to the David Starkey comments carefully, what he was talking about was an archetype form of white culture. It meant that you spoke a certain way and you acted a certain way. If you think about it logically, the majority of white people in this country do not speak that way.
Right.
They do not represent that class, and they do not act that way. So therefore, if you think about it logically, what David Starkey is actually saying is that most of the people in England aren't white anyway, and it's got nothing to do with skin colour.
He talked about a kind of chav culture, and he talked about nihilism, and he talked about something that he thought was so powerful it was to be feared. And Tony Sewell, who we spoke to yesterday, is a doctor of education, did say that Starkey erred on several points, but he was right as far as power, an intoxicating power that a particular kind, a particular strain of Atlantic, almost, black culture had, i.e. The blend of kind of Jamaican, North American rap, and what we have here in this country, that together becomes very, very powerful indeed. And that's what the youngsters are following.
But if you think about it, any kind of youth culture is powerful because that's what it's designed to. It will always have that, or designed for, it will always have that rebellious element in it.
Mm.
Think about before so-called black culture took root over here. What were the dominant cultures then? So you had rock and roll culture coming in from the US, and rock and roll is a black art form.
Mm-hmm.
But when it got taken over, or whatever we want to call it, whitewashed, it became something else. But did that not have a kind of disproportionate disproportionate influence on the white young people who were over here being exposed to rock and roll.
Indeed, there was a moral panic at the time, wasn't there? Yeah, the Teddy Boys, and there was a moral panic at the time. And interestingly,
absolutely,
the Teddy Boys ended up fighting black people.
There always is, and there always will be. The disproportionality, for me, it can easily be explained because, you know, one of my problems with this society, and I said it before these so-called riots or uprisings broke out, when I was being interviewed by one of the main radio stations, and I said to them, you tell me when you'll see a black boy of around 16, 17 or 18 being intelligent on mainstream TV at 6 o'clock in the evening, at 7 o'clock in the evening, at 8 o'clock in the evening. You don't see it. You don't get that representation.
I think the last time I saw an example of this was a 17-year-old boy called Franklin Addo, who had gone into Cambridge, but had decided not to go because, allegedly, they didn't have much of a rap and hip-hop scene, and he decided to stay here and study at the London School of Economics. Actually, it wasn't because of their lack of rap scene. It was because the LSE had a more attractive course, but even then it was spun to make it look like he was in love with gangster rap so much that he decided not to go to Cambridge. So I take the point there.
Exactly, and you see, this is what I'm saying is, you see, for me, my problem has always been that within these dominant societies, there is no balance. Because if we're thinking about the influence of so-called black culture, whatever that is, who promotes it? It certainly isn't African and black people who promote this so-called black culture. You know, if you get record companies and they want to sign rap artists, they're not going to go for the rap artists who are talking about the problems that impact or affect the people on the street. They're going to talk about the ones who are promoting this so-called gangsterism and gangster rap. 50 Cent is not a gangster. Mm-hmm. If he was a gangster, he's forgotten how to be a gangster. What he is a very shrewd businessman. Mm-hmm. You don't get that aspect of him promoted. What you get is that, you know, the nihilistic, whatever it is, self-destructive, rich or, you know, get rich or die trying.
But if the record companies thought they could make money out of a more positive message that talked about education, that talked about ancient Kemet or Egypt, that talked about the great things, great civilizations that the African descendants could point to, then they would make money out of it. Maybe they think, look, the people today want instant gratification, so we're going to give it to them.
Well, you know what? The proof is in the pudding, because before the PD era, that is the only type of rap that was selling in America.
Mm.
If you think about between about 90, remember LL Cool J got dissed for doing a love tune when people were saying this is the Afrocentric time now. This is the time when people are promoting this positive notion. So you had X-Clan, you know, KRS-One, Public Enemy, Steps of Sonic, I could go on forever. They were the people who were getting the big contracts and making the money. And then around the early 90s, it started to shift again, and then you had like the gangsterism coming in, and people started to promote that. You know, fundamentally for me, with the power of the media and the power of the advertising we have nowadays, anybody could sell anything. But one of the things that we have to be realistic about living in this Western society is wars and conflict make money. Sex and violence, as KRS-One said years ago, sells more than anything else. And we have to be realistic about that.
The Prime Minister, Dr. Les, has declared war now on gangs and gang culture. A lot of people saying, especially we've been inundated with emails over the last week, as you can imagine, some saying, well, hang on a minute, you know, people have been dying on the streets as a result of gang warfare out there, if you like, for the last few years. And he's never, you know, nobody at the top has kind of said, let's go out and declare all out war. But now some properties have been burnt down. People are starting to get really excited about this. How do you feel? Do you feel that this is a genuine from the Prime Minister, or just knee-jerk reaction?
Well, it's absolutely not, in my opinion, genuine from the Prime Minister, and it is knee-jerk. And in fact, Professor Gus John wrote to Theresa May, the Home Secretary, I believe on July the 4th, saying to her something needs to be done about these so-called inner-city gangs and the real gangs that are destroying communities and imploding. He wrote to Theresa May. She didn't even dignify herself by answering his letter and his proposal. I myself, in 2001, this is 10 years ago, when I was a lecturer in Goldsmiths College in the Department of Sociology, I submitted a research proposal to one of the major funding bodies saying I wanted to look at a research project entitled The Culture of the Classroom, Pathways to Violence. 20 years. Mm. It's not just now.
So what are we saying?
When things, it's almost like they become vogue, yeah. All of a sudden we get, you know, the Prime Minister, whoever it is, mouthing off and saying, we need to do something about these gangs. They don't pop up out of a vacuum.
Yeah.
People like myself who work on the street, at the interface with these young people, and we reason with them and we try to get them to explore different avenues and put them on different social trajectories, we don't get funding. And people say, oh, you're always crying, you don't get enough money.
Yeah.
But we don't get funded, we don't get support. I'm lucky if I'm invited to go into a school or a prison, I'm lucky if I get to do 6 sessions with those young people.
Yeah.
You're lucky if you get that. And what can you do? So all the work that you've done with them, you know, I've been into schools before and done 6 sessions with boys who have been on the cusp of exclusion. Some of these boys are supposedly the worst of the worst, the ones who, as soon as they get out in school, they're out there terrorizing people, their communities, and doing whatever. And I've actually turned a lot of them around in 6 sessions. Now, you imagine what we could do if people took it seriously.
Dr. Les, we're going to have a series
of... What kind of power would we have?
Indeed, this is the thing. I'm just wondering what you're going to be saying if you are called forward or invited to talk to either the inquiry or the review set up by Ed Miliband. I mean, he's going to set it up if he's not satisfied, the government one. We'll hear from Nick Clegg, I think, today exactly what kind of inquiry is going to be started, because people want to hear. I mean, I think they're going to be going to communities that have really suffered to hear from people. Will you attend any of those sessions? And what will you say to them if you do?
I will attend those sessions if I'm invited. But what I'll say to them, they probably won't want to hear. But in some ways, there is one project, because myself and some others are part of Boris Johnson and Ray Lewis Capital Men program.
Oh, yes.
Where we're going to train 1,000 mentors to mentor 1,000 boys over the next 3 years. So I'm one of the trainers on that. But to me, that's like a drop in the ocean compared to what we really need to be doing. So if they're going to have these kind of inquiries or public debates, let's hope it's not just, you know, pontificating or just mouth talk, and they actually want to achieve something substantive. Because one of the things that they need to appreciate, although on the surface this may look like a problem with so-called black boys and black gangs, we are not the majority in this country. We're the minority. The majority of the problems they have with gangs are not with black so-called gangs. And this is what people need to grasp.
So the majority of the problems they have with gangs are in places like, what, are we talking about Glasgow? Are you talking about Salford? What were you talking about?
Exactly. All out anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I resent the idea of them saying they're going to import some super cop. Because, you know, I know a lot of people, and I get a lot of stick for this anyway. A lot of people like to paint all the police with the bad brush and say they're all bad. But I know that I have worked with police, dealing with them around these gang situations before, and I've trained members of the Metropolitan Police. And those are people who sincerely want to do something about these problems, because they know that if they have children, their children can be affected.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, this idea of importing this guy who apparently, one of the statements he made, and don't beat me if it's wrong, but this is what's floating around now, is he said when he went into these areas like New York or LA, he said if there are 4 diseases, just treat them as one. And he was talking about the so-called gangs and drugs and prostitution or whatever the hell it was he was talking about.
Yeah.
So we need to be careful about, you know, importing these solutions when we have more than got people who are competent enough and people who have been actively involved in the community. What about the Black Police Association?
Yes, yes.
Sometimes people don't consult them. I've worked with them for over a decade.
It's Toby here. This is something I don't get here. The police did not solve the problem last week. Whatever else, whatever the reasons were for, when I hear, and all I hear, and, you know, this guy, Bill Bratton, has got a, you know, apparently got a very good record. I cannot understand why we wouldn't welcome somebody else's advice or input. I don't understand why we wouldn't, except to defend our own turf. And, you know, clearly, in the minds, I think, you know, the people watching last week, what we saw was a failure of policing. Whether or not it was because there weren't enough numbers, whatever the reasons were, to stand there and say it was marvellous, is completely contrary to what most people saw and felt. Now, I don't, and so frankly,
I'm astonished.
Well, you're telling, you know,
no, he didn't say that.
I know I'm paraphrasing here, but the drift of what you're saying is you're saying that, you know, you resent this guy coming in. You know, you're defending the British police here.
Let's get this right. I was not defending.
Well, you
the
just
British
did.
Police. I said I think it is wrong to paint them all with that brush. That's what I said. And the reason why I resent this guy coming in is because if...
But why should you resent him coming in? Why not welcome him?
Because, let me finish. If the government really want to do something, don't you think that they should go and interact with the people who are doing the work on the street, who have got the track record of working with these young people?
Don't
you think that would be the first port of call?
I think the first port of call for the majority of people in this country is to stop this at root. That is exactly...
How are you going to stop it?
Well, they've done it already. You know, when you were talking about... I mean, the bottom line is it could not go on like that. You know, the whole idea... Hang on, the whole...
I don't really know what you're getting so worked up about.
Well, I'm getting...
Like you're going to blow a blood vessel. I never said that I condone this. I'm not an idiot.
I didn't say that you did condone it.
What I'm saying to you is the first port of call should be, surely, with the people who work with those people in those communities who've got the track record. Gus John has been...
But what track record? Always, you know, you say there's a track record. What we're seeing is, you know, is fire and looting on the streets.
But you seem to be talking...
Are you seeing it now?
One thing, let me just come in here. It seems like you're talking across purposes because Dr. Les, correct me if I'm wrong, was talking about how the police work when they interact on the community policing level, i.e. on the day-to-day, getting to know the gangs, getting to know the people in the areas. You seem to be still responding to how the police acted on the night of the riots. Two different things.
No, what I'm saying is, what I'm hearing is what I regard as a knee-jerk response to the idea of somebody from outside coming in. I've heard nothing but British police, and now gentlemen here, fundamentally saying, no, we don't want them, we resent them, they shouldn't be coming in.
Well, lots of people feel that's the knee-jerk response.
Well, hang on, let me finish.
Sorry, one second.
And I don't understand why.
Toby, one second. Dr. Les, please, Dr. Les.
What I don't understand with your comments and what you're saying is, you think that I resent this guy coming over here because it's almost as if he's coming to tell us what to do. You're not listening. You're a classic case of people who don't listen. Because as Juju just explained to you, you're conflating what I'm saying.
What are you saying?
What's going on in your head? You're not listening.
No, but what are you saying? I'm listening now.
What I'm saying to you is that if there are people who work on the street and they work with these communities, they've been doing this work for years, but maybe not being listened to, not being supported, maybe they should be given the first opportunity to liaise with the people who are in positions of power to do something about it. If this guy comes over, who is he going to be in charge of? Who is he going to be influencing? Is it not the British police?
Well, who's to say they're not going to talk to you? Who's to say they're not going to talk to you?
Effectively and have a dialogue.
But who's to say they're not going to talk to you?
What do you mean is to say that you think that this guy from LA is going to come over and want to listen to anything that I've got to say?
I don't know. Why wouldn't he?
You must live in some kind of...
Well, why would you think that he would? Well, why? I don't need to be insulted. Why do you think that he wouldn't?
Why do I think that he wouldn't?
Mm.
Because the areas that he's going to be operating in is going to be nothing to do with the areas that I operate in, whereas on the street where we, myself and hundreds of others, do the good work.
Dr. Les, and we'll hear from Nick Clegg today exactly how he's going to conduct the early stages of this inquiry. He'll be going to various parts of London, I think, and then across the country. And we'll wait and see exactly how big and how wide the scope of this review is going to be. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much for having me. And ask Nick Clegg why he predicted there may be riots if the Tories got in last year. I think that would be an interesting question.
It very well might be. Thank you very much to Dr. Les Henry of New Beyond Limited.
This is Colourful.